parents fell in love the first time they met. Both were engaged to others. It was the spring of 1939, and they came face to face at a meeting of the Left Book Club in London. An hour or so later, they found themselves alone together, walking deliriously up the Strand, talking in rapid French. They slept together that night. For the rest of their lives, they were always by far the most important people in the world to each other, bar none, absolutely none, friends, lovers, children, grandchildren. The earliest image I have of my father shows me the two of us walking together along the London Road, then on the outskirts of Salisbury. I'm very small, three perhaps. It is raining, and I complain shrilly and with no fear of irritating him. "Walk behind me," he says. He strides ahead, a huge grey slab, a huge man in a long grey mackintosh. He shields me from the rain. This means we are no longer having a conversation. I have memories of touch rather than sight, which must be earlier than this. I remember when his enormous hand surrounded my chest completely. I remember the complex smell he had of mulched down tobacco and gorgeously masculine sweat. I remember touching the fissure along one fingernail. I asked him how he got that. "I bit myself," he said. "I dreamt I was a dog." I completely believed him. Why would he say something that wasn't true? Was it funny, in some abstruse adult way I didn't understand? There was a great deal about which I was supposed to be ignorant. The area of potential indecency stretched so widely around me that sometimes it was difficult to seem sentient, let alone intelligent. In winter, our flat was savagely cold. My brother and I would get dressed in the sitting room, in the small half circle of warmth from the electric fire, with its smell of roasting dust. My father would help us in our daily fight to get dressed. David with his tie, me with all my clothes, they always seemed too tight and slightly damp, hard to get on and off. When I was a young woman home from Oxford with a new boyfriend, admiring my thinness, I tried to get my father to bolster this new, elegant image. "But Daddy, wasn't I always rather thin?" He knew what I was doing, and he wouldn't play the game. He looked out of the window, leaving me behind, looking at pictures I never saw. "No, no, you were always a lovely, roly-poly little thing." It has taken me 40 years to accept the love in that remark. When I was small, he brought me comfort and safety. He had a round solidity that my mother did not. She was unpredictable, a volatile mixture, with sharp elbows and a clear, definite voice. I loved my father's deep, furry voice that matched his beard. I loved the way I could disappear into him, bury myself in his comfortable embrace. Then I was completely at ease with him. Once, when I was cross, he had refused me something. I pinched him painfully on his right thigh. He gave a hissing yelp. That's my scar. That hurt. It was about 3 inches across, exactly the shape and depth of a tea saucer. I knew it came from the wall. I felt complete, unquestioning love for him, long before I knew the word love. I needed him like the most basic of food and drink. I copied him. I tried to be left-handed. I deepened my voice. I ran downstairs the way he did, lightly, and with toes turned out. With my hands, I made the same shapes he did on the piano. I tried to imitate his air of troubled, heavy patience, which appeared especially when he pushed the mower up and down our vast, ragged lawn, or struggled with our vegetable garden, with its sulky cabbages sunk in the clay soil. I bitterly regretted being a girl. I wanted to grow up like him, to have broad shoulders, to put my hands in my trouser pockets. But he liked me as the opposite, flats, hair slides, little ankle socks.